challenging and changing days. Anybody face some challenging and changing days in your life? Anybody? Anybody ready for some of those challenging, changing days to end like the rain? Ready for that to end? You know, it's interesting how challenging and changing days impact our life. Because I can honestly say sometimes you get the blessing to pause and reconsider your priorities. Like, you get to think about it and pray about it and, like, search out if my priorities are right or not. Sometimes life doesn't give you that opportunity. Sometimes you have to rethink priorities on the fly, you know? We kind of had some of those this week. I don't know if you had a week like that, but it's amazing how priorities are challenged instantly when somebody breaks into your cars and steals stuff out of it, right? And especially if you think that they might have taken some of your personal information and can access every account you've got, right? It's amazing how that might impact the way you think about security and the way you think about stuff and the way you think about money, you know? It kind of causes you to pause and consider some priorities. I don't know if you've faced some things like that. We faced a tougher thing this week, and we've been blessed from the time we moved into this house that we currently live in about 6 years ago. We've been blessed with a great neighbor, just a real godly man, a man that is very much loved by the community, was the president of a bank for years and years and years here in the community, and just went to his funeral on Friday. He passed away after a long battle with cancer. Was able to talk and pray with him multiple times in the process of all that was going on. He's a great believer, very much a part of a church in town, very faithful to that church, and was able to go, and I'm just the neighbor behind, you know, his house, you know. But everything that was said and everything that was preached and everything that was communicated about him, I personally got to experience as just the neighbor. And so it's amazing when you're in those moments, and I'm just in the crowd. I'm not on a stage. I'm not having to preach or read a eulogy or anything like that. I'm just in the crowd as the neighbor. And it's amazing how those moments impact your priorities. I didn't get to pick it. I didn't get to choose it. And if I would have got to pick or choose, I'd love for Tommy to hang out longer. Not to mention he had this incredible gift of gardening that blessed our family many times in the spring and summer. But on top of that, I had a friend. I had a person that engaged me about my life and my family and my kids. And I'm already missing that. But I'll never forget the moment when Christy and I heard that his cancer was terminal and probably would take his life soon. We went to go hang out with him, and he was still very much with it and able to have great conversation and understand what was going on. And he was just able to look at us and say, you know, I've made some good and bad choices in this life, and some of those bad choices were health choices and kind of got me into this cancer thing. But he's like, I've lived a great life. I love the Lord. I love my family. My family knows where I stand with him. I'm ready for eternity. He talked about the condition of his soul being very different than the condition of his body. And I'll just tell you, that kind of conversation mixed with the kind of testimony that I heard Friday at his funeral, it impacts not just my thoughts, not just my personal choices, but it impacts the desire in my heart and deep in my soul to live a life like that. And he's not my hero. He's not my goal. He's not my God. He's a neighbor that lived well and that served God and served his family and served his community well. What a great testimony. Like I said, I didn't get to pick that part to impact my life this week. Some of the things that I got to, that impacted my life, I did get to choose, just like you. There's some things that we all face that we get to choose, and some things we don't get to choose that shifts our life, that changes us, that causes us to react with thoughts, and even I would say past thoughts are more inner into our being than thoughts, but down deep in our heart and souls that are impacted by some things. For example, anybody ever had a life-changing accident? Anybody ever had a doctor's visit where you heard some news that instantly not just shifted your thought processes about you know, health, but it impacted your heart and your soul? Anybody ever had a loved one that passed away. And it's interesting, when I designed that list to talk about, have any of these things ever happened in your life where you didn't get to pick them, you didn't get to choose them, they just happened, and instantly your inner being shifts and changes? All of that happened to me before I was 8 years old. By the time I was 8, I had all three of those things happen. And I'm not bragging or boasting, but I would just tell you, as an 8-year-old, you kind of process certain things in an 8-year-old kind of way. It's amazing how that kind of changes as you go through your teen and your early adult years, and then you get to other stages of life and you start processing those things, you know, in the concept of how you've lived life and the priorities of the past and how that affects the today and even how you want to live for the rest of your life. I've heard lots of people explain about conversations that shifted their soul. Statements like, I don't love you anymore. Statements like, I don't know how to handle what you're doing. Things like surprises that are so painful that you seek out, like what the song said a while ago, you seek out a God that are you there? Are you still around? Is it really well in my soul? Of course, if you know anything about that song, you know that that was written by a man, the old hymn, It Is Well With My Soul, by a man that lost all of his family to a shipwreck. And as he's sailing back for the funeral to the other side of the world, as he passes that spot where they were killed, he writes this song. It's just a song. Does it really reveal his soul? Did it shift the way he lived his life? Did he change the way he did his time? How he handled his money? How he thought about relationships? We don't know that part of the story. Of course, some of life-changing moments aren't bad. Some of them are great. Like, you get to that point where you graduate from, you know, certain stages of life, whether it's high school or college, or you graduate, you know, from a certain situation in work, and you move on to something else. And it's not just about different money. It's not just about different titles. It's about in an inner soul of being able to do what you feel like you've been called or gifted to do. That's some exciting shifting. And of course, there's always those, you know, moments in time where we have these emotions that come out that we see this other person and we use the phrase fall in love, and how that shifts not just our schedules, not just how we spend our time and our money, but it shifts our inner thoughts and it shifts our inner beings, and there's this place in our guts that change, right? You know, and when you see certain persons that fit that bill, you go, wow, my soul is changed because of this person I love, because of these kids that I've been blessed with, and your soul is shifted by that. Some of the shifts in our soul are choices that we make, some are not, and as we consider all of that, I want to challenge us each today, as we've talked over the last several weeks about how God designed us to love him with all of our heart, soul, and mind. And we've spent several weeks talking about how to love him with our heart and how also to love our neighbors with our heart. We're going to move to the one place that's an interesting place to discuss, called our soul. When we think about loving God with our soul, it pushes us to define what a soul is and how did we get it, okay? And I think that's an interesting little short conversation to have, because if you can think about all the different things that you being created and having the genetics of your parents and having a historical lineage of family and all those kinds of things, the soul is different from all of that, because the soul is the thing that God made to not just exist when you're born. And it tells us in the great Psalms that he knew us before we were ever born, that he shaped our inner being. And he's talking about that place in our soul that existed from before we were born, exists in our lives now. And here's the deal, it exists for forever. That there is an eternal destination that's tied specifically to the place called our soul. And so if you're in the Bible app today, I challenge you to go through a few questions and polls and conversations and even notes about sharing the condition of your soul. We can talk about how our health is. We can talk about, you know, how our emotions are. We can talk about how relationships are. And those are all great conversations to have. We spent several weeks talking about our hearts and what our hearts are prone to. But I would tell you that the condition of your soul is an incredible conversation to have as we build up towards the day that we call Easter. Now, as we lead into that day here in the next couple of weeks, and we're going to talk about soul each of those days, including on Easter Sunday, that I would encourage you to as I'm challenging you to consider the condition of your soul today, would you also consider that as much as you encounter others around you on physical or even mental or emotional levels, what about the souls of the people around you? I cringe almost every day. I get these notifications from a local news station that apparently loves to report wrecks where people have died. And yesterday morning, I got an update about three teenagers up by Sulphur Springs that were killed in a car wreck. And instantly, memories are brought back for me about people that I've known and loved. And of course, we've talked about Scott, a college kid that just graduated last year from high school that was killed in a car wreck recently as a part of our church. And we cringe over not just a young life, but a life that we've loved and cherished and had so much long-term hope for what's in their future. But I would tell you, just like with my neighbor Tommy and just like with Scott, the condition of their souls was more important than the conditions of their physical lives. And I would say this to you as a parent, as a neighbor, as a friend, as someone that has the ability to choose what you do with your soul. And I still think that's a kicker. I think it's incredible that God created something to exist before we were born, while we lived, and for eternity. And while we're alive, once we get kind of old enough to kind of figure out not just what we do with our time and our money and our thoughts and our relationships, but what we do with our souls is a choice. He gives you opportunity to do what you want to with your soul. See, God created that part of us that lives in us now that will exist into eternity. And the thing that really gets me about that is that you have been given the honor, the right, and I would even say the duty to choose what to do with your soul. So let's pause for a second and ask about the condition of your soul. I'm not asking about your body. I'm not asking about your emotions. I'm not asking about how much biblical content you know or don't know. I'm not asking if you like to be at church or not. That's not what I'm asking you. This is not about Sunday morning attendance. This is about the condition of your soul that God has handed off to you for a while for you to choose what to do with it. It is your call. And I'm going to do something a little different than I normally do. I'm going to read a set of verses all the way through and challenge us to really consider the conversation that was happening between Jesus and some others during that time where he's doing a very specific thing. He is asking if their souls are prepared for what is about to happen in life and in eternity. So let me pause again and say this to you. Is your soul prepared for what could happen in this life? And you know this, right? Hopefully we know this by now. That there are moments that we don't get to pick. That things happen to our bodies. And things happen to our minds. And things happen to our existence as we know it on the outside. And it instantly puts the soul conversation at the very top of the list instantly. But here's what I cringe about, friends. Is some people don't consider the soul conversation until it is too late. If you know me at all, if you've been around me at all as a pastor, as a preacher, you would know that I'm not a fear-based preacher, right? I'm not the guy that wants to scare you into heaven. I don't think that works. I'm not the guy that says, hey, you better know before you walk out those doors, you could get hit by a car and be facing God. I don't do that. And as much as I say all those things that I don't typically do that and share those things, I also want to say to you, based on my experience in the last few weeks, and I would say even months and years, we have no idea what tomorrow holds. Zero. You may not have one opportunity ever again to look at somebody else and say, you know, I love you. This may be it. You have no idea if you get to say it tonight or tomorrow morning. You have no comprehension of controlling not just tomorrow, but even this afternoon. Now, you have some plans probably. Maybe you're going to watch some basketball. Maybe you're just going to pray that the rain ends. I don't know. Maybe you're going to, you know, maybe it does stop. You're going to get out and mow like I need to or exercise or something. Maybe you got plans for the week or for the month or for the year. You probably have some of those out there. I'm not saying those are wrong, but let's just be honest that we hope for those. We desire to do those things, but we don't know. And so what Jesus is doing in this conversation, he is saying to them in their moment of conversation, this is the moment where you can do something not just with your body and not just with your emotions, but this is the moment that you have full opportunity to do something with your soul. And you better have an understanding that this is the chance to do that. Now, I don't say that out of fear of manipulation. I say that out of being a human being and seeing what's going on around me. So as we read this today and as we wrap up here in a few minutes, I want to challenge you to consider a couple of questions that Jesus asked the people he's having the conversation with and apply them to your own personal life. Because this is a really interesting moment in history as Jesus shows up in Matthew 16, when Jesus shows up to the region of Caesarea Philippi. Now, I'm going to brag just a little bit. Here in a couple months, I get to be in this location. I'm going to be over by the Sea of Galilee, where Caesarea Philippi is this great gathering place of people. And he in this conversation, he is walking from the Sea of Galilee, headed to the city of Caesarea. And as he's going there, he has this great conversation with his disciples. And here I'm going to just be quiet. I'm going to read it all the way through. And we're going to answer some questions that Jesus asked. He says, who do people say that the Son of Man is? And the disciples said, well, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah. Others say Jeremiah or one of those great Old Testament prophets, because you kind of talk and act like them. But what about you, Jesus says to the disciples, who do you say that I am? And the mouthy one of the bunch, because there's always one. We know that, right? Simon Peter, all right, speaks first. Ooh, 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 I got the answer. You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Great answer. We'll talk more about that in the next couple of weeks. Verse 17, Jesus replied, bingo, you got the right answer. Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah. For this was not figured out by some history lesson that you've had, not some preacher or teacher. You're not reading a good book that says this is who the guy is. It was not revealed to you by man, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, that on the rock that you just pronounced of who I am, I build my church, and the gates of Hades will never overcome it. I will give you the keys to the kingdom, and we'll talk about that next week, the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on this earth in humanity in physical form will be bound within your soul in heaven. And whatever you loose on this earth and all the things that you engage in relationally and physically and emotionally and financially, those will impact and be loosed in heaven. And he warns his disciples, and we need this warning. Don't tell anyone that he was the Christ at the time. Why we need this warning is this is the time to tell everyone that he was the Christ. At that point, he was building up for what was about to happen. Well, that has happened. We know that it is Easter in a few weeks. He took on death. He took on sin. He took it all on, was put in the grave, rose out of it, and won. And as we celebrate that here in the next few weeks, he wanted to pause that story. But now we get to tell it. And it says from that time on in that conversation, Jesus began to explain to the disciples what was going to happen. He said, I've got to go to Jerusalem. I'm going to suffer many things at the hand of the elders and the chief priests and the teachers of the law, and that I must be killed, he said, on the third day. I will take on sin and I will take on death and I will beat it and I will be raised to life. Peter, that mouthy one, you know, a while ago, the one that said, "You are Christ, the Son of the living God," he speaks up again. Here he is, just being mouthy. And he says, "Never, Lord. This shall never happen to you." He is ready to fight already. Listen to what Jesus says to him this time. He turns and says to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. Ooh, you're a stumbling block to me. You have the things of man in mind, not the things of God. You're thinking of earthly stuff, fleshly stuff, financial stuff, sexual stuff. You're thinking of all the stuff that fits your little box. You're not thinking about eternity," is what he's saying. Jesus says to his disciples, some of the toughest words of all the New Testament. "If anyone would come after me," if you want to follow me, here's the deal. You got to deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. Whoever wants to save his eternal life has to lose that physical life. But whoever loses that physical life for me will find that eternal life. What good? Here's the questions. What good will it be for a man if he gains all of the world, all that it promises, all that it holds, yet forfeits his soul? Is that just a question for you or me? No. I think it's a question for all souls that's been created. What can a man give in exchange for a soul? What's worthy of that exchange? Great question. We'll dive in more next week. For the Son of Man is going to come in all of his Father's glory with his angels, and then he will reward each person that according to what he has done. And I'm going to add a few words: with his soul. What you do with your soul will determine how God reacts in that moment. What is the condition of your soul? Father God, as we pause and consider the very moment that we face you face to face, that it won't be about just singing some songs or listening to a sermon. It won't be about a Bible study. It won't be about what I know or don't know. It won't be about how many times I went to church or how many times I slept in. It will be very much about the very condition of our souls and how you have blessed us with a soul. You created us with a soul to be only fit by the designer of it. And as you sacrificed your one and only Son for my soul and every soul in this room, every soul that's ever lived in this world, that it was designed to have a connection directly with you. Lord, may our soul be changed today. And maybe for some of us, it's the very first time. It's been mental games and physical efforts and great emotional moments. But Lord, may our souls never be exchanged for anything, because it is the most priceless thing that we've been given. Father, as we go into a time of considering the condition of our soul, Lord, thank you for giving us hope. Hope not just for the blessings of eternity, but hope to have a sense of peace in our soul now. Lord, thank you for giving us the opportunities to know you and to respond to you. Thank you for loving us past the moments of our sin and failure. Thank you, Lord, for the sacrifice of your Son that tells us how worthy our souls are to you. And Lord, may that give us a new sense of direction, a new set of thoughts, a whole new set of actions and attitudes. And most of all, Lord, may it speak to the very inner core of our existence, our souls. And may we be forever changed and filled with your hope.